Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Hanukkah Sameach, and also Happy Thanksgiving for all of our U.S. subscribers. This week, Miketz with Rabbi Michael Hatton. Also, I want to announce that we'll be moving the podcast very shortly to our new distance learning website, elmad.pardes.org. That's elmad.pardes.org. So as we make the switch to the new website, if there's any problems with your podcast feed, please check that new website for more information. This week, Rabbi Michael Hatton discusses Miketz. Rabbi Michael Hatton is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Michael Hatton.
It came to pass at the end of 2 years that Pharaoh dreamt, and he saw himself standing on the banks of the Nile. So begins Parshat Miketz with a continuation of Sefer Breishit's most enduring story, the narratives of Yosef. Yosef's saga is the lengthiest in the book. It reveals to us much concerning the human condition and the role of God in our lives. Consumed with an immature arrogance, despised by his brothers, Yosef is catapulted by their rage into an exile that transforms him. When he finally reveals himself to them in next week's Parsha, he is no longer the boasting youth who reveled in his personal dreams of grandeur, but rather the chastened and mature man of God, who wisely recognizes in his rise to fortune the future salvation of his family. As for his brothers, we made their unsettling acquaintance in Parshat Vayeshev. As they gleefully prepared to dispatch their brother, and then went on to conceal the crime from all. By the time the final events of the tale are played out, they too have expressed among themselves genuine remorse and regret. They go on to then concretize that newfound commitment by refusing to allow the tyrannical viceroy to seize and to imprison beloved Binyamin, even at the cost of their own freedom. In the broadest possible terms, then, the story of Yosef and his brothers is the story of true teshuvah, where that term refers not to verbal pronouncements of ritualized resolutions, but life-transforming thoughts and acts that repair broken lives, mend tattered relationships, and restore us to God's compassionate presence. It seems, however, that in order for that tshuva to be accomplished, every participant in the account must undergo some sort of painful process of self-realization, one that is triggered by harsh external factors of the most sudden and inexplicable kind. Thus, Yosef's proud and pleasant dreams are in an instant shattered as he is cast into the dark pit, sold into slavery, and finally exiled to a far-off land. Similarly, the brothers' complacency is confounded by the famine that forces them down to Egypt, where they must unexpectedly face the absurd charge of espionage. Returning to Canaan, they must then confront their old and broken father with the terrible news of the viceroy's demands. Might the Torah not be indicating that this is the way of tshuva? To have the foresight and fortitude to utilize life's often inexplicable trials, to somehow find our way back to God and to our true selves? There is, of course, another participant in the account, one who is often overlooked as the events of the narrative so breathlessly unfold. Though we see his anguish and feel his hurt, we tend to underappreciate its magnitude by exclusively viewing it through the prism of Yosef and his brothers, rather than in its own right. I refer, of course, to Yaakov himself, the other central figure in these parshiot, whose life appears to us as the muted background against which the drama is played out. Let us recall, though, that Yaakov is absolutely indispensable to the account. It is precisely because of his inappropriate but not mistaken favoritism that Yosef is so despised in his brother's sight. The coat of many colors, the hated symbol of Yosef's innate talents and his father's unbounded love, was, after all, a gift from Yaakov, and the impetus that drove the brothers to kill. Doesn't the text underline his involvement by declaring that Yisrael loved Yosef more than all of the other brothers, for he was the child of his old age? He made for him a coat of many colors. When Yosef eventually chances upon them near Shechem, sent to meet them by Yaakov himself, they tear the coat from him and cast him into the pit. Hoping to rid themselves of his noxious dreams forever, the brothers sell Yosef to the Ishmaelites, but they cannot rest until they have executed vengeance upon that mantle. Ritually dipping the coat in the blood of the goat, the brothers then present it to their aged father as proof of Yosef's demise, a satisfying conclusion indeed to its hated history. But scarcely can they imagine the torrent of sorrow that its tatters will unleash. In this week's parsha, it is again Yaakov who is responsible for driving the inexorable process forward. As famine strikes the Canaanite countryside and its painful pangs begin to be felt, Yaakov sends his children down to Egypt to secure grain. The text highlights his role in the matter quite strikingly. Yaakov saw that there was sustenance in Egypt, chapter 42. So Yaakov said to his children, "Why do you look at yourselves? Behold, I have heard that there is sustenance in Egypt. Do go down to there and secure it for us, so that we might live and not die." Yosef's 10 brothers went down to purchase grain from Egypt. Thus it is Yaakov who first suggests a descent to Egypt. It is he who sends the 10 brothers on their way. It is therefore his decision that inadvertently leads to their unexpected delivery into the viceroy's vengeful clutches. Soon the brothers find themselves incarcerated. After 3 days of surreal terror, they are released and sent on their way, but Shimon is taken as hostage. The viceroy demands a steep price for Shimon's discharge, that beloved Binyamin be presented before him, ostensibly to substantiate the brothers' claim of innocence. Returning to Canaan, the brothers must now face the raging grief of their father, who initially refuses to send Binyamin with them. Only after the famine forces his hand does Yaakov bow to his son Yehuda's entreaties and agree to allow Binyamin to accompany the brothers to Egypt under his aegis. Thus, once again, it is Yaakov who provides the indispensable key for the story's relentless progress, even providing his sons with a symbolic gift for the tyrant, chapter 43, verse 11, in order to secure his favor. Of course, the story will only reach its climax in next week's Parsha with the unmasking of Yosef, but we, the readers, already know the outcome. When Binyamin will stand accused of stealing the viceroy's silver goblet, Yehuda will plead on his behalf. Once again, he will invoke the grief of his aged father Yaakov to drive home his argument for Binyamin's release. But unwittingly, he will return us in the process to the story's unhappy beginnings. Yehuda says, "Your servant our father said to us, 'You surely know that my wife gave birth to 2 children. One of them has gone from me, and I have said that he is surely torn to pieces by beasts. I have not seen him since. If you take this one also from before me, and tragedy befalls him, then you will surely cause my old age to be brought with grief to the grave.'" Chapter 44, verses 27 through 29. The viceroy can bear the tension no longer, and in a cathartic release reveals his identity. But again, we note that the matter unfolds in response to the reports of Yaakov's grief. It seems that Yaakov's presence, or at least the reports of it, is once more imperative for the story's conclusion. In the end, all is resolved. Yosef bears his brothers no ill will, they are tearfully reconciled, and he quickly sends them to fetch his old father and their households. While initially incredulous of their reports of Yosef's survival and triumph, Yaakov eventually accepts his son's fantastic tale and accompanies them down to Egypt, there to finally effect a tearful reunion with his beloved child. Yosef hitched his chariot and went to meet his father Yisrael at Goshen. When he appeared before him, he fell upon his neck and cried upon his neck exceedingly. Yisrael said to Yosef, "Now I can surely die after I have seen your face, for you are still alive." Chapter 46, verses 29 to 30. In a fitting conclusion to the entire saga, then, Yaakov lives out his remaining 17 years of life under Yosef's watchful gaze, meriting to see his son's great glory, his grandchildren's rise to prominence, and even the birth of his great-grandchildren. Though he will die on foreign soil, with God's blessing to his children upon his lips, his loyal son will return his mortal remains to Canaan, to be finally reunited with his ancestors and their legacy. Buried at Machpelah, his place in Jewish history secure, Yaakov finally achieves peace. If we begin to consider the structure of the story from the perspective of Yaakov, we are struck by its astonishing symmetry. It is Yaakov who favors Yosef initially and brings down the brothers' rage upon them all. But it is also Yaakov who dispatches the brothers to Egypt, there to inadvertently trigger the arduous process of reconciliation. It is Yaakov who unleashes the process of Yosef's descent to Egyptian exile, but is also Yaakov who sends his 10 sons down to the banks of the Nile to not only secure grain, but to unknowingly fetch Yosef and to eventually restore him to his land. It is Yaakov who is directly responsible for the most painful wrenching of Yosef from his loving arms, but it is also Yaakov who, without realizing it, initiates Yosef's ultimate return to his embrace. If we speak about a teshuvah of Yosef and a teshuvah of his brothers, then we must also speak about a teshuvah of Yaakov. For now we realize that his deeds demarcate the deeds of them all. The early rabbinic sources already allude to the theme of teshuvah animating the acts of Yaakov and dynamically driving the narrative forward. The Torah reported that he made for him a coat of many colors. Said Resh Lakish, in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, "A parent must not show favor to one child over the others. For on account of the coat of many colors that Yaakov our father made for Yosef, the brothers hated him and could not speak to him peacefully." Breishit Rabbah, 84, 8. The parallel passage in the Talmud concludes, "For 5 sellahs worth of silk, with which Yaakov favored Yosef over his other children, namely the weight of the coat, the brothers became jealous, and the matter came about that our ancestors descended to Egypt." Tractate Shabbat, 10b. In other words, Yaakov's indiscretion brought about the exile to Egypt. By inadvertently sowing dissension among his sons, he aroused their hatred of Yosef, and thus inevitably initiated the unfolding of the subsequent events. If self-realization is the indispensable aid to self-growth, if painful trials are sometimes needed to prompt self-evaluation and its corollary of self-transformation, then it is Yaakov who bears the brunt of that burden. Yosef and the brothers were fated to play out their respective roles. In order to come to grips, not only with themselves as individuals before God, but also to repair the nature of their relationship with each other. Yaakov, their father, must also share in that tale. And this is why the Torah squarely places upon him the responsibility for both its inauspicious commencement as well as its triumphant outcome. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Hatton. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.